Well, g'day. Yeah, I'm looking for a book titled Five Drives and a Kick to Toby King by S.R. Price. You don't. Oh, never mind. Hello. Yeah, I'm looking for a book titled Five Drives and a Kick to Toby King by S.R. Price. You don't have it. Oh, dear.
Good old Yellow Pages. Not just there for the shit things in life like a block train, but also for prehistoric ideas as well.
Hello. Yeah, I'm looking for a book entitled Five Drives and a Kick to Toby King by S.R. Price. Oh, you do? Can you keep it for me? My name, yes, of course. It's S.R. Price.
Well, perhaps it's not all Five Drives and a Kick to Toby King, as why a show, it could very well be our year. Coming up on the podcast, we review a very positive Wigan loss. Madam Boyd predicts her top five, but will the Campanologists foil her plans? Daniel looks at players' contracts. Dennis makes the press box, although unfortunately his tackle bags is back. But can Sam's new section make up for it? There's a Twitter vote and your social media. We look forward to Saints at the Halliwell Jones. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, but thankfully I'm a long way away from the capital of London as the UK departs Europe. But introducing a podcaster that name is definitely spelt with a capital, a man who's visited more European capitals than Richard Ayoade. Yes, he's our very own travel man, and with Toronto soon to be added to his carbon footprint, it's the strikingly handsome Sam Sankey.
Good evening, Mr. London. Yes, looking forward to the Toronto visit. I'm expecting it to be a lot more cultured than the visit to the Pie Dome last night.
And we may have withdrawn from Europe, but my second podcaster has been using the withdrawal method for years. That was until 2015, when he decided to cut all ties with his bollocks. And so there's no chance of this old lad introducing tiny little footprints on the continent anymore. It's the gorgeous Dennis Waywell.
Oh, flawless. Lovely. Yes, well, once you've cut all ties, that's it. Although, if I was offered a reversal by the Trump new trade deal, then I think I'd rather cut my bollocks off, if I'm honest. So, there you go. I've got a little drink.
What are you on tonight?
This is a little... it's called a Trixie Vicks. It's off Mrs. Waywell. And I've not actually tried this before. This is fresh out the bottle. It's basically gin infused with some plums off the tree. Talking about bollocks. So here goes. Hopefully it'll taste all right. But please judge it by my response. Jesus.
Did you have a drink at the DW last night, Sam?
No. I don't need it anymore. I've shown I'm in control.
All right, let's crack on. Let's move straight on to the Warrington-Wigan game. The final score was Wigan 16, Warrington 10. Attendance 15,040, surprisingly little bit more than possibly we thought. The Wire team was Ashton, Lynham, King, Gelling, Charnley, Austin, Ratchford Hill, Clark, Cooper, Curry, Ben Bird at Massilla, and Jason Clark. Interchange bench was Philbin, Akawala, the young Danny Walker, and Luther Burrell. Let's have a listen to the highlights and then we'll review.
In his testimony of the year, Cooper, 31 years of age, plays that ball. Here is Chris Hill. Blake Austin now. Austin has Murdoch Massilla powering up through the middle and he leaves. Burgess on the ground and gets the first try of the new season. Big Ben strikes. You've got what you wanted in the end. Carrying play on. O'Loughlin's pass well dealt with by Bevan French, and French cutting infield. Dummy superbly under the post. Wigan responds. And it's their mercurial player. We haven't mentioned him until now. Bevan French. On Sky Sports Arena, and it is, meanwhile, a red card for Chris Hill. Luluai again. Hastings finds Bevan French. French over the top, and Marshall will get in the corner. For Jackson Hastings, Warrington trying to keep it alive. Lulawai now, they're looking for another try, maybe for Marshall, but instead it's Hardacre. Hardacre working his way to the corner and getting there.
So a good start by us, Sam. 8 minutes in, Ratchford kicks a penalty. We go 2-0 up. And then on the 14th minute, boom, Ben Murdoch-Missilla breaks through George Burgess's hip and carries four Wigan players over the line. What a try.
Yes, it was brilliant. And as I think Dennis will probably explain in a minute, we watched them practice that move over and over again in the warm-up. Didn't we? A lovely little crisscrossy move.
It's a new move, I think, what we witnessed there. So in the warm-up now, they've got this new crisscross. Comes with a bit of sort of a crisscross effect, throwing the ball back and to each other. And did we see it replicated on the pitch, Sam? I think we did a couple of times, didn't we?
The ball's going one way and they drop off of the ball inside for Murdoch-Missilla to come back in on a 90-degree angle up to the post. And, oh, how funny was it to see George Burgess sat right on his arse.
It's not the first time that Gorgeous George has missed a tackle. He was renowned for missing tackles in the NRL. I think prior to that missed tackle on Ben Murdoch-Missilla, Sam, he missed a tackle on Blake Austin when Blake Austin made half a break, which I think led to the Ratchford penalty to put us 2-0 in the lead. Were you surprised so early on in the game, first game of the season, that we take a kick for goal in those opening minutes? Would you have done that?
Yes, it was right in front of the post. Take two while it's on offer, right in front of the post when it's 0-0. Definitely.
And at this point, Sam's agreeing with the rest of the crowd around me going, oh yeah, we should take 2 points. And I'm going, no, we should be driving for the line, tiring them out. And how right I would have been if we would have tired them out sooner.
Good on you, Dennis. What was the clientele like around you, Dennis, at the game on Friday?
I've realised now that I probably need to take some earplugs with me next time. The decibel level was very high, but as I explained last week, I am a linguist, and as I explained last week also, that if you're educated, you can use the full vocabulary, but I didn't feel that was the case around me. The lady next to me, I said to her just before kickoff, she was halfway munching, I think it was a cheese and onion balm or something. And I said, you'll have to eat that pretty quickly because we'll be going over the line in a minute. And she got a little chuckle out of her.
Yeah. So you're pulling middle-aged women in the stand.
Yeah, that and the fact that, you know, she actually spoke quite nicely, where her husband, every word was F and Jeff for the rest of the 80 minutes.
Oh, dear. Well, it was a bit F and Jeff on the 19th minute because Bevan French strolls across Warrington's defensive line, picks an easy gap, and he's in unopposed under the sticks. An appalling try to give away, Sam, really, wasn't it? It was very lethargic by the Warrington defence.
Yeah, I've not had a chance to watch the game back yet, but we started so very well for 10 minutes, really well. And then we defend, they're trying to come out their own 20. We give away a penalty. We get put on the back foot, and for the next 10 minutes or so, we're chasing shadows for the only 10 minutes in the entire game. But for that, it was like a mad 10 minutes, and we were passive in defence. We were all hanging off, and he danced around three players, I think, while they all stood watching each other.
He danced around the first one, which I think was Curry, and then I think he looked at Hill and Cooper, who were looking at each other, and he just like took that step and just jumped through the gap.
I think that was a classic sign of Curry's anxiety. He doesn't like coming out the line as quickly as he used to, and Frenchie's almost walking as he goes past Curry. Curry just holds his ground, says, I'm not moving
yes,
up on
he
you.
He holds his line. That's he right. He holds
there.
His line as Frenchie's drifting across the front of our, but it wasn't just Curry. There were several of them in a line as he was just drifting across them.
Well, talking of an 88-year-old winger in my father, he made a very good point to me on the phone last night. He said, if you watch it back, the run from Bevan French starts right on that right-hand side and Lynham actually chases him and then stops chasing him. Lynham was coming up behind him and all Lynham needed to do was keep running and he would have tackled him.
And all of a sudden, he goes a few paces and then goes, I won't keep going. If he chased him across field, the speed that Ferenc was going at, he would have just absolutely smashed him. So they were all worried about holding this line, not getting out of position.
And that's what made it look a little bit comical, because that Ferenc, he almost came to a stutter stop, something like, you know, Dec Patton-esque, and he sort of like stuttered and then started again because he thought, I think, he was going to get tackled at that point.
Oh, dear. Well, Hardacre can't miss the kick from in front of the sticks, and it's Wigan 6, Wire 8. And then on the 24th minute, the turning point of the game, perhaps, when Wigan are awarded a penalty try, as in the last-ditch attempt, Chris Hill takes off Sam Powell's head.
Usually, when you get one of your players sent off, usually you think, oh, referee, that's wrong. But there was no doubt that, was it? It was clear he messed that up. Completely and knocked the lad out. So no complaints on a penalty try, and sadly no complaints on a red card.
How many weeks will he get for that now? What sort of is he looking at in terms of disciplinary this week?
I think three, but maybe two.
Can I just say that the journalists at the DW Stadium were debating that at the end of the match, but none of them could actually verify it because the Wi-Fi signal doesn't work in the press room.
Oh, dear. Well, 28th minute, there was one more score before the halftime break, and that was another penalty to Ratchford. So we went in Wigan 12, Wire 10. In terms of a first half, first day of the season, away at Wigan, I think we'd have probably taken that. I know we were 8 points up, Sam, but if you'd offered us that at the start of the game, say you'll just be 2 points down going into the interval on that opening day, you'd probably have taken that, wouldn't you?
Yes, if you'd have offered me that at the start, with 13 men, I'd have taken it. To actually have produced that performance, a man down for most of the half, it was a superb effort, the first half. And I know we've not got to the second half yet, but it continued, didn't it? So at half-time, very pleased.
Okay. All right. Well, second half, not much happens in that sort of first opening 10 minutes. It's all a bit nip and tuck, back and two. And then on the 64th minute, possibly what lost us the game, Mike Cooper is sent off. He's in there for a sin binning based on obstruction. Steve Price, and we'll come on to the press conference later, thought possibly it should have been shown at full speed. Again, I think it was a pretty fair judgment, wasn't it, by the video ref?
It was one of, if it had happened the other way round and one of our players was pulled back or it obstructed like that, we'd have been screaming blue murder to have him sent to the sin bin. So in the cold light of day, fair enough. But actually, I thought the key was just before that, Rob. I don't think the key was a sin bin for obstruction. I think the key was maybe 2 or 3 minutes before, when we break downfield, Jason Clark ends up with the ball and puts a little kick through, and the referee says charge down from a guy who clearly knocked it on, and Wigan cleared the lines and got out from away from pressure. If we're then still attacking, the other incident might not even occur.
And all this from the man who can't see at the other end of the pitch.
we tried to work out when, at what point, we could no longer read the names on the back of the shirts.
So, yeah, it was at the other end, this incident, and we could only actually bend our necks and look up at the screen at that point. So, I mean, to be honest, I couldn't really see anything in it. I didn't really think there was anything in it, to be honest.
It all happened so quickly. I think Kendall thought that the Wigan player was standing a little bit closer to Jason Clark, and he'd almost charged it down. But clearly on the replay, you know, the ball leaves Clark's hand. There's a fair few metres between the ball and the Wigan player's hand. And in that time where the ball is travelling to the Wigan player, you see his hand come out, and it's a clear knock-on. It's no different to the Mike Cooper incident with the sin binning. If you slow it down, it looks very different. But I think in this case, it was more prominent than the Mike Cooper sending off. Slight chance, Sam, that Mike Cooper incident was almost a trip. There was almost a leg that went in there as well.
Ferenc didn't go flying, did he? He just stumbled a bit. It might have been a bit different if he'd have made like a Premier League footballer and thrown himself to the ground. it might have been a bit different.
Okay, well, Wire are down to 11 men, and then a minute later, Wigan create an easy overlap, and Liam Marshall scores in the corner. At that point, lads, did we think it was all over? Was that the end of the game?
I don't think it was going to be game over. I think it was sort of like a realisation that I think we sat there and thought, look, they are going to score. But I think the way that we actually sort of were handling the fact that we were a player down and now two players down. And Wigan, let's be honest, at this point, there was a realisation they were absolutely shit.
They were playing against 12 men and at some points 11 and created very little. Mm. And actually, on the flip side, with only 12 men and occasionally with 11, we were creating more than we did in the entire 10 games, the last 10 games of last year.
So are we all in agreement then that on about the 65th minute of the first game of the season, we've written Wigan off, that Wigan are shit?
I'd be worried if I was a Wigan fan because, you know, they look absolutely knackered towards the last 10 minutes. They didn't create anything, considering we only had 11 people on the pitch. They took all the wrong options. So there was nothing to suggest that they're going to do anything special at this point of the season.
Were there little glints, Sam, in maybe a couple of the Wigan players to say they're getting a bit long in the tooth? I thought Farrell, he dropped a couple of balls that he didn't quite bend his back for that he would have done in the past. He also got away with I think he ran through the line on one occasion and he sort of got away with it, but he was getting in the way. It wasn't a planned move by Wigan. I think there's just a few signs there that Farrell isn't the player he was. They've certainly got O'Loughlin, who, you know, had to move to six. He can't play a full season again. It's not looking brilliant for them.
No, if they have to rely on those two all the way through the year, they're not the players they were. And just like with Ben Westwood, you can be a super player and then you become a good player and then you become an average player, because one thing you can't do is stop yourself getting old. And as Dennis said, the feeling in the ground was that we had more energy despite being a man down. So that might just simply be that we were more ready for game one than they were. They might be this idea of gradually moving into the season. But on 65 minutes, we looked the better team despite the scoreboard.
I have to say, Kendall, I really don't think there was anything, it was necessary for him to stamp on a Wigan player's leg at a certain point. I mean, that's going too far, surely.
I think he's gone on report, Dennis.
Oh, has he?
Oh. I think we'll see how we go there. Well, that was it, boys. There was no more scores. For the last 15 minutes of the game, the game ended 16-10 to Wigan. We had that kick through, I think, after that Matty Austin chased. Had it been anyone but Bevan French, he would have scored that try. The ball bounced up nicely for him, but French just came across and got his hand on it.
Who's this new guy? Matty Ashton. Is this a new name?
Get that attention on a beach and in the water, Matty Ashton. Okay, well, this year we're running with a listener's man of the match. We had four options, and it was so hard to give the options. One reason being that we had so many good players. The other reason being that I text Sam for the four options, and he didn't text me back until he got to the car. But those four options were A, Ben Murdoch-Masilla, B, Matty Ashton, C, Mike Cooper, and D, to sort of put them all together on that collective noun we used in episode one, we went for the players group. We had a clear winner, Dennis and Sam. You both said to me there was going to be a clear winner, and that was Matty Ashton with 59%. Ben Murdoch-Masilla picked up 14. Mike Cooper just the 2. And the players group, the United Front, 25%. Talk to us about Matty Ashton, Sam. I mean, what a debut from a young lad.
Yes, I'm trying hard not to get too excited because it's only 80 minutes. But the enthusiasm, the speed, his positional sense, he's obviously a natural rugby player. Just one moment, actually, when he picked up the ball in his own 20 metres, the Wigan lads were bearing down on him. He stepped the first man and then slid to the ground to ensure he wasn't tackled, held up and pushed back 10 metres. That's just a simple thing, but it's the type of thing players that aren't used to the game. Burrell, in the same situation, would probably have stood up tall and tried to battle his way out.
Whoa, stop.
And he got pushed back.
Stop. It's not Burrell.
Sorry.
It's Burrell now, Sam. He's playing rugby league now. He's playing rugby. He was superb. His tenacity all over the park. I mean, the poor lad ran himself into the ground, didn't he? He just didn't stop. He's brave. As you said, he's intelligent. He's clearly the fastest guy out there on the park as well. it does create, I think, a really good problem for Price, and that is that surely we have to keep him there at fullback. From what we've seen, based on the fact he was our man of the match, Ratchford's almost looking for a new position. And this, well, we'll come on to this possibly in a second, but it looks as though we found ourselves a new fullback, Dennis.
I think so. I mean, you know what? I probably said to Sam at the time, and I think I said to you on a text as well, is that I think, looking at him, he's played himself in that position. And when you think about, you know, who we've got, obviously we've got Widdop out, and the natural thing is to drop Ratchford back and everything. I think you look at what he did at fullback, and I think he was playing himself in a position maybe for the wing.
I don't see him as a winger, Sam, at all. I think he's too frail. I think he's going to get bashed into touch too many times. You know, you almost need to have a bit of weight on to play on the wing in the modern day game. He goes looking for the ball. That tenaciousness to go around the park, following the ball round. He's the perfect option to play fullback.
Based on 80 minutes, yes. If he's going to play there again next week, isn't he? Because Widdop isn't going to be available. So let's see what he does next week. And if he comes out to next week with a positive performance, he's then played two of the big guns in Super League. And let's see how he goes.
Well, staying on the topic of Matty Ashton, here's what Matty had to say after the game.
Yeah, the boys really dug in. It shows a lot of work pre-season to go down to 12 and 11 men throughout the game against a good team like Wigan as well. You've seen how much it meant to the fans. I think they appreciated how much we dug in there, but we're unlucky to come away with a loss.
So I think an interesting point there that Ashton brought up there, Sam, is that the fitness of the team, it really showed down to 11 men. And we're still in the game. We looked the fitter of the two sides, even though they had 13 men on the park.
We looked the fitter of the two sides. And if we compare to last year, just two changes of position, with Ashton coming in at fullback and Ratchford going in the deck pattern role, we suddenly looked a quicker team all over the pitch. And obviously when Danny Walker came on, albeit only for 10 minutes, he was flying out of dummy half. And the only place we didn't look to have any pace was at centre.
Yeah, well, that's OK. So let's sort of now focus on the team and look at individuals within that team. And you've mentioned a few there. We talked on the podcast last week about we've potentially got an exceptionally good team because there's five or six players in this team that if they have a good season, we really are on for Old Trafford. We mentioned Matty Ashton, tick next to Matty Ashton. We mentioned Ben Murdoch-Masilla. Again, we put a tick next to him. We'll go on to a couple of others that we still have maybe question marks on. And the two were the second rowers, and that was Luther Burrell, and also Ben Curry. First of all, Burrell, is someone ironing his kit? He came on and his kit just looked so much crisper than anyone else's. Did anyone else notice that? It was clearly washed in some other form of washing detergent than the rest of the team. It was like the new boy at school, wasn't it? He needed to get muddy.
I saw when they were leaving as well, I saw a picnic basket being removed with some silver cutlery being packed in there as well. So I think there's something definitely to be read in that, isn't there? Did he not get sent off at some point? Or he had to go off for he got a bit knocked out?
I mean, we didn't really see him for too long, Sam, because he had to go off for a head assessment. Did you see anything in his game last night, Sam? He wasn't really on the field for long, was he?
He wasn't on the field for very long, so jury's still out. Other than he must be doing something in training and a bit in the Cooper testimonial to warrant himself on the bench ahead of existing rugby league players. So we'll see.
Well, to sort of all tie this together then, so we found ourselves a new fullback in Matty Ashton. It's then a case of where do we fit in Stephen Ratchford? Because he is one of our better players. The Australians always run with the idea that you put your best 13 players in a team and you find positions for them rather than stagnating them down to one spot. So it looks like we've got two centres, Sam, that are very much from the same mould. They're similar in stature. Neither of them are that quick. In King and Gelling, it's put them on alert, hasn't it, that one of those two now could potentially be dropped because Ratchford goes into the centre position.
Just before he speaks, shall we have some kind of like Gelling alert alarm system? Because I get the feeling, having sat next to Sam, that he's got a bit of a downer on Gelling.
Oh, he's on edge, is it? You on edge, Sam? You on edge?
Not yet.
Come on.
Okay. We spoke about the centres last week, and I think we said they're all okay. And that's my concern. Both Gelling and King worked hard last night, so I have got no problem with the effort that either of them put in. My worry with Gelling, and he showed it early in the game, is he always wants to push it a bit far. He was under significant pressure in our own 20 metres, and he tried to force a pass out that we just got away with. And I think what Dennis is referring to is I probably shouted something along the lines of, keep hold of the fucking ball, you idiot.
Oh,
something like that. I think that's what Dennis is angling to.
It's like being back at the match. Oh.
Well, think, it does.
You know, that's my concern and frustration with Gelling, and it's not just based on last night. It's my observation of him over his however long, 7, 8, 9 years career so far that we've been watching him.
Mm. Well, I've got a jigsaw puzzle that I've put together. I think that those two are on alert because I think Ratchford has to go into the centre. I think he's a good enough tackler to play centre. And that game, we've talked about the headless chicken of Ratchford, how he runs in and out. You're never quite sure what he wants to do. Fits perfectly at centre. He played centre at Salford. He can go on the outside. He can come back inside. He knows how to pass his ball, a ball to a winger as well. So maybe the wingers will get a bit more distribution if Ratchford's there. But based on the fact that we've still got a big question mark against Ben Curry, and King seems to be, if anything, a similar player now to Curry, but maybe even with a bit more grunt and a bit more speed in his step, that King becomes almost the interchange second rower.
Well, King has played in the second row a few times, and I guess the older he gets, the more suited he will be to that role. Maybe not as fast as Gilmore of old when he used to play for Bradford, but that type of player who can switch between second row and centre, maybe.
Well, on current form, let's match them up then. So King against Curry on current form, who's bending his back more to tackle?
Ben Curry.
Big call.
Well, I've got statistics to back it up.
Ooh. Okay.
My goodness.
We touch a nerve every week, Dennis, on Ben Curry, don't we? We should probably move on to the Curryometer. We asked the question after Dennis put it together where Ben Curry would sort of lie on last week's performance. He's come out from the listeners as somewhere between a Corma and a Dupiazza. So not much spice in there for week one, Dennis.
That's a massive scale, isn't it? So if you take out, are we going to do the mean, median and mode? So if we look at it that way, he still ends up more or less where I suggested he was last week, which was Rogan Josh needs improvement. So I think that's pretty much where he is. So that's like about 5 on the scale, 5 out of 11.
Okay, so a steady dish yet again on the table. No one's really wary of it. No one's saying, oh, it's a bit spicy, that one. We're all having a nice bit of it, getting it down pretty easily. And we'll see what happens. Okay, before we move on, one other one, Sitiliti Akawala. Did he do 1.5 minutes or 2 minutes, Sam? What was his actual time on the field?
Well, time on the field was 3 minutes, 7 seconds. But the ball was out, The ball was out the ball was out of play for about 40 seconds. So, you know.
So let me get this right. We're down a forward, so you'd think clearly he would do more minutes, but he's actually done less. We've even used him for less minutes when we've only had 12 men on the park, one of them missing being a forward.
Well, I don't know, obviously, how many actual minutes he was on the field for, but he carried the ball three times. He carried the ball just three times. And as you say, we're a prop forward off, so you would think he would be on the pitch at least double the time he normally is.
Okay, well, the guy that was off the pitch was Chris Hill. We've had an email in from that, sorry, a Twitter in from Daniel Murphy. He writes, Hill deservedly sent off. I'd expect him to get 3 to 5 match ban. In my opinion, it just emphasises the issue we have with Hill, which is important times in a game, he comes up with brain farts. I mean, it does seem to be creeping into his game, Dennis, doesn't it? We've touched on this. He's not a liability, but he's not quite where he was.
But what do you mean? He's not quite where he was. Can you just explain that a bit more?
Well, he's not up to Great Britain standard anymore. We've said that he shouldn't really keep the captaincy. It's almost affecting him. You could see him in the stand how frustrated he was to be off the field. And I think Hill just needs to calm down a bit. I think he just needs to take a chill pill and just go back to what he's doing best, and that's carrying the ball up. There's too much responsibility on his shoulders, and it's affecting his game with brain farts, as Daniel puts it.
I just want you to get you to say brain farts twice, that was all. No, I think the thing is that, you know, when they let that first try in, he tried to tell everybody that it was his fault and that he was taking responsibility that he'd missed a tackle and everything. But we discussed it last week quite clearly. You know, when you look at Cooper and Hill, they need to rise up. Like, yeah, they're the colonels. Let them take the back seat and focus on the game, like you say, and get somebody else young or, you know, well, Widdop. But it was Blake Austin ended up being a captain yesterday, didn't he?
But he was the one who went to the referee when they put the supposed gouging incident on report.
Blake Austin, his sort of performance, Sam, it was a little bit up and down. There was signs there of the Blake Austin of old, but we just clearly need Widdop to come back, Widdop to dictate play and let Blake Austin do what he does best, yeah?
Yes, I think... for me, in the first half or first 50 or 60 minutes of the game, Austin was excellent. And when it came to that last 10 minutes, when we were really trying to force the issue and find something out of nothing, easy for me to say, I'm sat watching it in the stand, but he seemed to take a couple of wrong options, like he was trying to produce the glory play with a huge looping pass out wide or a low kick to the corner that didn't quite come off when it seemed to us watching as they were attacking us. The option was to pass it to the next man who was running onto it like a tank.
Okay. All right. Well, I think Paul Swift kind of sums it up what we're trying to say here. And we're not trying to be critical because it was a superb performance by Warrington pretty much across the board. Paul Swift writes, Hill is a liability. As a team, we give away far too many penalties and make some very poor decisions. Austin's kicking and Ratchford's kicking at the death was terrible. We needed a slightly better kick, didn't we, in that last 5 minutes. There was a couple of kicks across field that weren't really deep enough. The Wigan players got to them easily, or we just didn't have them far enough upfield when we caught them.
Yeah, I think that's right. It wasn't that the kicks were that bad. It was just the last 5 or 10 minutes, the panic rugby to try and get that try, whereas a true champion player, hopefully Gareth Widdop, stays calm, stays cool, and makes the difference.
Well, one player who played very well in those last sort of 10 minutes was young Danny Walker. We didn't hardly see anything of him last year, but boy, he came on and just he created a spark, Dennis, didn't he? He came on, he was zipping in and out, just got Wigan on the back foot a little bit. Were you impressed with him?
Right. Well, I'll be honest, he did. Yeah, he did sort of like do that. But I would stress again, Wigan was shit. and they were all quite flat-footed. They were all very tired. And, like, you know, sometimes that can make you, like, you look better than you actually are. And I would just sort of like to factor that variable in there, that Wigan was shit. I've said that three times now on this podcast. I'm sure we'll get extra listeners this week.
Okay. Now, what would Brian Bevan say? At long last, following our hard-hitting journalism, has been awarded a press pass. So we dispatched journalist cadet Dennis to the press conference. Here's what Steve Price had to say about Mike Cooper's sin-binning, his answer to Dennis's question, and the latest on Widdop's ankle injury.
Yeah, the Mike Cooper incident.
Yeah,
well, what they got to understand is slow motion. Of course, when they keep replaying it in slow-mo, it looks a lot slower, doesn't it? So you just got to keep it in normal speed and then make a decision off that. So, yeah, I thought that was a... I'm not going to, you know, sit here and... Chris Kendall's a, you know, very good referee, and so is the video referee. So we got what we got. You know, we learned some valuable lessons tonight, and we'll be better for it.
Steve, you described him as a Ferrari. We described him as an Aston Martin. How do you think he got on tonight, mate, Ashton?
Well, our chairman would describe him maybe as a Lamborghini, maybe. He's a quality player. There's so much more growth in Matty Ashton. But when you get growth, it's off the back of courage. He's brave. You could see that tonight. He's still got a lot more development in him. But he's a kid who wants to learn and trains extremely hard, and, you know, always stressing himself. So, he's got a bright future as long as he keeps his head down and, you know, just keeps working hard. But, you know, I thought Benny Curry had some really good signs tonight. I thought he had some really good touches, and I was very, very pleased with his output tonight.
How's Gareth Widdop doing? Is he getting close?
Doing really well. Walking freely, no pain. He's getting very, very close.
Too early next week, you think?
Bit too early next week, yeah. But he's getting very, very close.
Dennis, how is a press conference at Wigan? Talk us through it.
Well, as I've mentioned, the instant coffee was of a meagre offering into, I think, I can't even remember what it was, don't drink it. I think it was a big jar of Nescafe. Mm-hmm. I think there was a few tea bags scattered on the side. And by the time I got there, there was like sugar on the top of the bench and things. So first impressions were that the room needed a lick of paint. Probably can't afford that down at Wigan nowadays. Entering the media room, all the usual folk were there. Now I'm one of those guys. Spoke with our mate Gareth. He gave me a few tips.
You saw Dave Woods as well, didn't you? Dave Woods was there. Or was he the teabag?
Yeah, Dave Woods. It was a very mundane affair for most of the people there, I think. Obviously, I was there just in our, what would Brian Bevan say, capacity. I was the most professional in the room, I would say. So I was very prepared. I had two phones. I was all primed to ask the key question. Now, my key question on the night was to Steve Price was going to be, as with the lights down on Bridgefoot in Warrington Town Centre, they're often stuck on red and yellow. As per the game tonight, where we also saw red and yellow with Cooper and Hill off the pitch, what would the forward strategy be going forward? But I had to drop that because I think we just had to recognise that Matty Ashton, or the Ashton Martin, is going to be the topic of conversation for Warrington Wolves fans.
So, now, very interestingly, Dennis, when you asked him the question and Steve Price looked you straight in the eye, he clearly realised we've been having a go at Curry, because he changed the topic completely onto Ben Curry. You didn't even ask him the question about Ben Curry.
You say that, Rob, and when I obviously asked a question about Matty Ashton, and, I think halfway through his answer when he was looking at me, he saw a little wry smile on his face. He knew who it was and immediately thought of Sam and thought, God, that guy's had a go at Ben Curry, hasn't he?
Which is why we didn't take Sam to the press conference, because we're worried about his... Yeah.
So that's the reason.
dear. Right, okay, so we can expect you at the Halliwell Jones press conference next week asking those critical questions.
Yeah, I can see Sam putting his hand up there, but I think, as I said, for that reason, we don't really want Sam in the firing line at the Halliwell Jones. So yeah,
keep Sam out of this. Keep Sam out of this. We'll keep backing him and just see what happens.
I just want to say I have driven a Ferrari, an Aston Martin, and a Lamborghini. So there you go. Oh. That's Mr. Price knows me.
Okay. Okay, it's time for an exciting new section to the show. Yes, facts are stubborn things, but statistics are pliable when you have Sam's spreadsheet. It's time for Sankey Stats.
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's statistics.
Well,
hang on. Can I go for a pee now and make myself a drink and this, that, and the other? You know, now you know what it feels like. Tackle bags, eh? Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know whether to be delighted that I've got my own jingle or angry that it's a piss take jingle, or maybe I'm just ambivalent. So you can look that one up.
Definitely a piss take, Sam.
Right. Okay. So I thought we would simply...
Okay, moving on to the next section now. It's on to social... Oh, sorry, Sam. I thought you'd finished.
We'd simply look at two or three... maybe four key statistics and see whether they reflected the game.
I think the key word there was simple, Sam, wasn't it? Simple stats.
So first and foremost, Matty Ashton, I'd like to thank Betfred Super League that Matty Ashton is the only player missing from the home or away team statistics. So I had to go onto the Fantasy League website to see that he ran for over 130 metres. That's very professional, Betfred Super League website. Mm-hmm. Our most metres were made actually by Blake Austin, 139, and he had two clean breaks and three tackle busts. And Toby King and Anthony Gelling both also ran for over 120 metres, where our top tackler was Ben Curry.
Oh, bullshit.
With only one missed tackle. However, just to satisfy your concern about him, he did only run for 41 metres.
Oh,
I disagree with that. He ran for about 83 metres. 40 metres was sideways, yeah.
Okay, so overall the team, this is what I want to show. That not always do statistics equal the scoreline.
What about statistics?
Yeah, what about that's statistics? Okay. Yeah.
Offloads. Wigan, 7. Warrington, 24.
God, could you imagine watching Wigan every week when they were offloading the ball? 7 times. Yeah. How boring's that?
Meters, Wigan, 1,155. Warrington, 1,291.
Bloody hell. And that's with a player less and for most of the game, yeah.
However, the thing that might have swung it, errors. Wigan just 7 because they're playing boring rugby. Warrington, 15.
Sorry, I'm going to say, we put that poll out the other week where we were on about, do we want to see entertaining rugby and win? Now, you know, all right, we all want to win. But we got to the end of that game and we felt, actually, we watched a really good game of rugby, and the effort that they put in, now reflected in some of those stats, actually made it something like worthwhile. And I think on the back of that sort of performance, yeah, all right, we lost this week, but I think there's something to be said about actually playing like that and actually picking enough points up to finish in the top five and having a chance of winning it this year.
An entertaining positive loss.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll go with that.
Okay. Was there a culprit behind the errors, Sam? Was there one particular player that really stood out there in those 15 errors?
Gelling a lot.
No, they were actually sped quite across. Stephen Ratchford 2, Lynham 2, Gelling 2.
Said with a bit of emphasis, though. Did you hear it?
Gelling 2.
Gelling 2.
And all the others were one each.
Oh, so it really was a players group of sort of errors, wasn't it? Okay.
Interestingly, we conceded fewer penalties than Wigan.
Okay. So is that it? Are we done?
That's it. We're done.
Oh, Christ. We've been building that up for 3 months, haven't we?
I'll tell you what, though, he did actually survive our onslaught, didn't he? You know, like trying to put him off. Stuck to the task. Bit of professionalism coming through. Not bad.
Here's a quote for you. Who said this quote? It is generally recognised that women are better than men at languages, personal relations and multitasking, but less good at map reading and spatial awareness. It is therefore not unreasonable to suppose that women might be less good at mathematics, physics and stats.
Cal Fitzpatrick.
Okay, moving on to social media. We've had an endless amount of comments this week on Facebook, on Twitter, on email, pretty much all relating to the game. I'll run through a few of them and maybe we can just take turns in agreeing or disagreeing. So I'll start with Sam. This is the first one, Sam. Do you agree or disagree with this? It comes from Scott W. I'm feeling positive about us after that game. We were beaten by 8 points, but 8 of those points came from when we were down to 11 men. Encouraging! Exclamation mark.
I think his maths is marginally wrong, but yes, I do agree with that.
Gareth Monkey. It's exciting to see a fullback with pace. We look better without Chris Hill. I'm looking forward to seeing Philbin start next week.
I'd agree with that. I think that would be a good thing. Although it's like a bit of a pain in the ass that, you know, Hill's like, that was plan A. I think it's good to employ plan B early in the season.
I think the great thing about this was is the fact that I said agree or disagree, and you've both waffled on for about 5 minutes already. Ryan Nico summed up the views of more than a few to say, I think it's tough to leave Toby King out of the vote. Paul Robinson, very positive after last night's display. How was that a charge down? Question mark.
No.
It was a clear knock on. No complaints with the red card and sin bin.
No. See, I answered that before you finished as well.
Okay. Let's move on to the referee, Christopher Kendall. Dave Birch. Kendall must be in with a chance of winning the Wigan sponsors man of the match.
Slightly harsh, Dave.
Andy F. Waving away in the knock on, you couldn't make it up in the first game of the season.
Get the Kendall decider out.
And I think we'll finish with Wazza. He says, is this the standard of refereeing this year? If it is, then shit.
Oh, we shouldn't have any of this on the podcast. That's terrible.
All right. Well, let's move on to the letter email of the week. It came in via email. It comes in from Alison. Alison writes, she says, Dear Pod, after you place the word vegan in your Apple podcast description, I can only presume, due to your SEO, search engine optimization, I downloaded your podcast by mistake. However, bizarrely, I went on to listen, probably because I actually grew up in Warrington, so I have a soft spot for the town, even though I now live in Helford, Cornwall. Alison goes on to write, my journey to veganism starts by saying I became a vegetarian in 1985 after purchasing from Dawson's Music Shop on Sankey Street the Smiths album Meat is Murder. Unfortunately, vegetarianism in Warrington didn't really go hand in hand in the 80s, and as a consequence, I ate too much dairy. My weight fluctuated, my personality swung up and down, and to an extent at college, I was known as Moody Stilton Tits. By the end of the mid-90s, though, my love for tin mining had moved me to Cornwall. So, with the aroma of freshly cooked fish dancing through the air, having caught the morning by the local Cornish fisherman, I soon turned my allegiance towards pescatarianism. However, the combination of vegetables and fish played havoc with my digestive system, leading to a difficult period of flatulence well into the noughties. Then, in 2005, I became a vegan, The farting subsided, I lost weight, no more mood swings, and dare I say, ever since, my lovemaking has flourished.
No.
Alison goes on to say, I'm not a rugby league fan, although I did attend a game at Wilderspool once with an old boyfriend of mine who asked me to go. I remember nothing of the game apart from feeling very cold and getting piss all over my Dunlop Green Flash. She concludes by saying, if I'm honest, I despise all sport, but I'm pleased to hear rugby players are now embracing veganism. It will serve them well and probably make them slightly horny. Keep up the good work. Your podcast isn't actually that bad. Lots of love from the Cornish coast, Alison Smythe. Isn't that nice? any sign of Mike Cooper or Luthi Semi at the DW, Sam?
It nearly took Dennis's eye out.
I was going to send Alison a T-shirt for being Letter of the Week, but due to our professionalism at the podcast, I checked with our manufacturer in Taiwan, and the distribution from the factory to the port at Keelung City, for where we dispatch the T-shirts, is done via mule. So I think it's only fair to say that we won't send one to Alison. Okay, let's move on to the Twitter vote. Let's move on to the Twitter vote. Which of these signings do you believe will turn out to be Wise best player in 2020? We had Burrell, Latu, Matty Ashton and Anthony Gelling. A clear winner again, Sam. We all love to see pace. Matty Ashton got 66% of the vote.
Yeah, Ashton was excellent, wasn't he? We've waxed lyrical about him so far tonight. And I think we just need to leave it there. Let's see if he backs it up. But the first match, real excellent debut.
Okay. You may have read recently that in the last few weeks, the star Beetlejuice, seen in the sky as the star that makes up Orion's top left shoulder, has reduced in brightness, with it having gone from being the 7th brightest star in the sky to the 21st. So talking of stars and our very own podcast star, Dennis, metaphorically, you could say Dennis couldn't dim anymore if he tried. Yes, we thought Dennis's tackle bags had completely gone out and turned into a supernova, but it turns out he was just a podcast solar eclipse. So coming out from behind Uranus, we welcome back as he reemerges from his black hole, it's Dennis's tackle bags.
Tackle bags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Hey. Do you like your new jingle, Dennis? Do you like your new jingle?
It's quite insulting, as usual. I said I was going to drop the technological side of tackle bags, but I think actually I need to carry on. I would like to carry on in that theme. So what I'd like to discuss tonight, I haven't got a title for this one, but it's about the TV, so the telly belly of watching rugby league. So what I'd like to say is, obviously Sam's gone for a drink. So if you hear a noise during this, Sam's pouring himself a drink. Right. Well, what I'd like to discuss is there's a couple of anomalies that I've noticed and observed with TV broadcasting, and in particular the perspective of the camera angles. Between the two codes, I've noticed that rugby union and rugby league, obviously very similar in the conversion of the game. When they're actually filming it, if you notice in rugby union, the shot of the ball and the kicker in relation to the post seems a lot further away, giving the viewer and the observer the perspective of being a very difficult and long kick. Whereas when you watch it in rugby league, it looks like a very simple, you know, knock them over the post from any angle. So I've noticed it. Have you guys noticed this?
Yep, I've been noticing that since I used to watch the rugby with Nigel Starmer-Smith in the 70s. It's clear.
Rugby special.
It's clear when they kick at goal in union, it looks like the post is about 4 miles away because they're using a totally different lens. And you think, oh, that's a really hard kick. My God, he's kicked it. And then when you see it in rugby league, they use the more, portrait focus on the lens. Looks it's about 3 meters away.
Mm. So there you go. So that's the first anomaly. The second anomaly is the refresh rate and speed of the NRL games. Now, looking at, like, you know, the different frame rates, you've got NTC at 30 frames a second, about 525 lines per second. You've got CCAM at 25 frames a second and PAL at 25 frames a second. Now, clearly, there is a distinct difference in the speed between the games in the NRL and looking at, you know, the games over here, that the games in the NRL seem a lot faster than they do over here. Now, after a bit of extensive research over the off-season, I've noticed that the Australian TV have been broadcasting on a higher frequency, 3.58 megahertz, which is often used in Brazil. And as a result, it makes their game look faster and more superior. And as a result of that, they're able to gain more sponsorship from various bodies and so on. And so what I'm going to suggest this week in Tackle Bags is that I may be able to have a word with someone with a bit of money, maybe Mr. Moran, whether he can invest in something that we can put onto like your laptop or TV, like a plug-in device that actually just slightly increases that frequency and speeds up the rate of the game to sort of compare it or to make it look more attractive to the viewer for Sky or anyone else like that. So what do you think? You think that's so a goer?
Are you saying that Rimmer's snatch speed isn't quick enough?
Well, you say his snatch speed, I say his snood speed. I don't know. It's one of them things. Sam?
Could you just record the game while you go down the pub for an hour, come back and watch it on fast forward?
No, because that's actually too big of a step. It's like a logarithmic scale. An exponential sort of element going on there. So, you know, if you speed it up times two, it just wouldn't be the same. It's only very slight. It's a frame rate thing, sort of thing. So
sounds very technical. This sounds like a lot of research has gone into this.
It is, yeah, it has. So I want to put that to the vote. If you think that's a good idea and you wish me to carry on with this technological tackle bags theme and my TV... Jenny, as I'm now going to call it, give us, I forgot what, who do we write to?
Right. Dennis, this has to stop. This constant technical obsession you've got with Dennis's tackle bags. I mean, it's been every week now for 34 episodes, okay? We need something new, okay? Well, we're sick of the technology. You keep stretching it out week after week with this techno bullshit. It's time to move on, Dennis.
Where's all this coming from? You thought this was a good idea when we discussed it in the off-season.
Do you know how many letters I have in your section? We clearly get a negative spike. Oh.
Might would just want to explain what happened there.
Ironically, there the whole screen went blank. I lost complete snatch there. My snatch went black.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Right. Okay. In last week's podcast, Daniel touched on a good point about so many Warrington players coming off contract at the end of the season. Well, the season may only have just kicked off, but there's nothing better than a bit of forward planning. Here's Daniel with his view on which players Wire should retain and which players are surplus to requirements.
So we'll start with the most high-profile one, which is Stephen Ratchford. Ratchford has been Warrington's first-choice fullback for a number of years now. He's also played in the halves for Wire and even at centre at times. Whilst I don't necessarily think he should be first-choice long-term, I think Warrington should be looking for a different fullback, a bit younger. Perhaps maybe Matthew Ashton's going to be that man in the coming years, who knows. I still think Rashford is a good player to have around the club. I think he offers a lot with the ball that other players can't do. I think he's probably a good player to have in the dressing room because he's been at the Wire since 2012, so he knows the club inside out. He's a model professional. I think the same with Mike Cooper. Even though Mike Cooper's approaching his mid-30s, he's still a great prop, one of the best props in Super League last season, in my opinion. And I'd definitely be keeping him probably for another 2 years, perhaps. Again, I'd like to see younger players come through in that position, whether that might be Joe Philbin. I don't know much about Latu, who's been signed from Australia, but perhaps he can do the business. I'd keep Cooper, the premise that he would have less of an important role within the first starting team in future, because there's been too much reliance on Hill and Cooper in previous years, which I don't think is helping them as they grow older. I think two players who are fighting for a contract this year are Ben Curry and Ben Murdoch-Masua. My instinct is they will both get contracts because I think they're both big names at the club. I think they are very popular players. I think Murdoch-Masua could have a really good year if he's used correctly. That might be in the second row, it might be a loose forward. And I certainly hope we get better things out of Ben Curry this year. We know he's playing for a contract, which is remarkable to thinking given how brilliant he was not so long ago, but his injuries have no doubt damaged in terms of things like his pace and his defensive awareness. But I still think that if he can get something out of Curry this year, he'd be worth keeping. Declan Patton doesn't even bother. I think Jason Clark will be let go at the end of the year. I don't really see that he's offering enough for the money that he's on. Perhaps he will do something this year, but I'll be surprised. Harvey Levett is spending the year out on loan at Hull KR. I can't see him getting a new contract, to be honest. I don't think Steve Price is that interested in him. He's loaned him out twice. He doesn't get much game time when he is at Wyre, so I can't see him getting a new contract. I don't know anything, to be honest, of Ellis Robson. I know he's an academy player. I think he played in the friendly against Swinton, so I don't know what kind of chance he's got. Sammy Kabula. I feel harsh saying this about a new signing, but he strikes me as someone who won't get beyond a one-year contract, which I do feel harsh saying that, because I know very little of him, but it seems a very low-profile signing. I've not heard many good things about him. And then finally, Matt Davis, who I'd definitely be giving a new contract to. I was really impressed with Matt Davis last year signing from London. I thought he did brilliantly as an interchange and as a starter, and I want to see plenty more of him this year. So 10 players out of contract at the end of 2020, and of those 10, I've said I would keep three definitely, Rashford, Cooper and Davies, and then Curry and Murdoch-Masua as maybes, and the other five, I don't think so.
Sammy's come out with a good list there. So we've got players coming off contract: Rashford, Cooper, Ben Murdoch-Masua, Curry, Levett, Matty Davies, Ellis Robson and Kabula. Which two would you really like to keep out of that list? I only want two. We don't want any caveats. You're only picking two.
Rashford and Ben Murdoch-Masua.
Dennis, would you agree with that? Would you go Rashford and Ben Murdoch-Masua out of those?
No,
those names?
I wouldn't. Oh. No. I mean, I know it's tough. It's really hard when you're talking about people's futures and things like that. So I'd just like to caveat that. So I would say that would be Cooper and Ben Murdoch-Masua. No, I wouldn't. Just Cooper.
Just Cooper. I think Rashford has to be kept on. Cooper as well, I think he's still got a whole heap of time in him with what we saw last night at the DW. Ben Murdoch-Masua, I don't think it will be Warrington's option. Again, that highlight has gone on his showreel. I mean, you sent the clip to me, Dennis, that the one clip that they showed on Australian Sports Channel was Ben Murdoch-Masua running over George Burgess and four other players. He's going back to the NRL at the end of the season. He can't turn down the money that they're about to offer him. Curry, I'd happily keep Curry, but he has to be kept on a lesser salary than what he's on now. I think at the moment, what he's offering in comparison to what he's giving. Levett, I think we've seen the back of. Matty Davies, yes. Maybe get a bit more of Curry's money to keep him going, because he might. Sam, you're a bit worried about this.
You only gave us two options. You're going through 97 different options.
Yeah. I noticed that, yeah. He leaves the cream for himself, doesn't he, eh?
Yes.
Oh dear. Right, now, this week we received the sad news following the passing of broadcasting legend Nicholas Parsons at the ripe old age of 96. Nicholas hosted the long-running Radio 4 panel show Just a Minute, all the way from its inception in 1967. So what would Brian Bevan say? Thought it was only fair to honour Nicholas. We had our very own game of Just a Minute. Okay, boys? So remember the rule, lads. Okay, I give you a topic and you talk about that topic for a minute without repetition, hesitation and deviation. Buzz in if there's any of those, either way. Dennis, you've got a question.
You know, when they actually play this for real, do they not get sort of told of what the topics are before they start? Because we've got no idea what you're about to say.
Well, they say they don't have any idea of a topic. I'm feeling that straight away we're going to have some hesitation as I say the topic.
Oh, God.
Okay, heads or tails? Heads or tails? Sam, what do you want? Heads or tails?
Heads.
Will it really make a difference?
Yeah. It's tails, Dennis, to start.
Yes, what a surprise.
Okay, welcome here now to Just a Minute, and I'm here with Dennis and Sam. I remember back in 1978 when I was in Pussy in Boots in Wimbledon, run home at Christmas. It was absolutely wonderful. But let's move on now with the show. Here we go. Okay, and remember, boys, there's no repetition, hesitation, or deviation. Dennis, your topic is, you have a minute to talk on the topic. Starting from now, Declan Patton.
Declan Patton was given 10 days in 2019. He performed very well for the first five games, but that was always debated by the podcast because he was always throwing the ball out of play. His kicking was in particular... But
I'm sorry, Dennis, I have to stop you there. Sam seems to have forgotten the rules or he's just not fucking listening. But on three occasions then you said his. So we'll move on. I'll restart the clock. It's over to you, Sam.
Declan
Hesitation Patton. There by Sam, hesitation, so it's back to Dennis. Dennis, you've got the clock.
In 2019, Dick Patton brought out a very interesting colouring.
Excuse me, that's twice you've used the word Patton now. I know you very cleverly there changed it from Deck to Dick.
Please, Patton's in the title, he's allowed to say that.
Is he?
Yeah.
You see, that's really why I should have given this away last year. Okay, back over to you, Dennis, let's start the clock.
Dick Patton brought out his colouring book in 2019, which actually featured various different sizes penises, which could be coloured in at every different angle.
He said each three times there.
Over to you, Sam. You've got 20 seconds left on the clock. Starting with you, Sam.
20 seconds is too long. I'm going to hesitate.
Over to you, Dennis. 15 seconds to go.
Declan Patton was also given the Man of the Match award by Sam on the podcast 13, and he also went on to be considered one of the best players by Rob London by the time he reached...
Beep. Deviation. Dick Patton was never considered to be one of the best players by Rob London.
Oh, absolutely excellent there, Sam. It's back to you. We've got 1 second on the clock, starting now.
Patton.
Hesitation, Dennis wins. Dennis wins there. Thank you. Even with 1 second to go there, Dennis takes it.
Now, with the uncertainty of how the UK will trade with the world going forward following Blighty's exit from the EU, there's a lady should perhaps we turn to for advice, what with her peddling her trade to the general public for years. Dennis put in his call to Madame Boyd for her predictions, and she left us with a share of striking answers.
Oh, good evening, Madam Boyd. Sorry it's a bit late.
Yes, Dennis, it's nearly midnight, and I believe the bells of Big Ben are about to chime.
Oh, just to be clear, you're not still hanging around with Benny Westwood when you mean that, do you?
No, dear. It's Friday the 31st. We're about to leave Europe.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that, yeah. Anyway, Madam Boyd, we've run the stats through the system for last year's predictions, and it turns out, albeit these are Sam's stats, you were 99% accurate last year.
On the contrary, dear, I said Dick Patton would be leaving the first team. He is now playing for the second team, is he not?
Ah, right, yeah, that explains the 1% theory. Yeah, I get it now, so yeah, that's 100% now.
Hurry up, Dennis, the clock's ticking.
Okay, Madam Boyd, could you give us the top five finishing positions for the teams in Super League this year, please?
Certainly, dear. Robert Dearest, come and get my balls, please. You remember how you do it now, don't you?
There are undoubtedly question marks. There are, I talk to a lot of people who scratch their heads and feel...
You're not feeling.
It's very random, it's very spurious, and nobody can really understand why and how and what.
Oh, just get on with it, Robert. Oh, now let me see. Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, I think this will have everybody on tenterhooks, Ben Boyd, so if you could do it in reverse order, just to add a little bit of tension to proceedings.
Certainly, Dennis. My predictions for the Betfred Super League of 2020 will be as follows. Finishing in fifth position, we see. Fourth position, it is. Third position, it will be. Second position, it will be. Premier Champions this year in first. Will be.
Thanks for that. See you. Speak to you next week.
If you wish to leave a record of your call, please state your name.
Well, I didn't really pick up on any of those, Dennis. I thought I heard the word Warrington on the first gong, but it was a little bit faded.
Well, they were all in there. I think Sam was with me. He heard them all as well. So, I mean, I think, you know, we don't have to discuss them again. I think the only thing we do need to do is probably next week consider what the odds are and whether Madam Boyd proved to be correct, you know, in the end of the season.
Okay, well, we'll look at the runners and riders next week. Now, it turned out on last week's prediction, Callum was the only one to get it wrong. I guess you cannot be old and wise if you were never young and crazy. Here's Callum.
We've made it past the first round, and we're back at everyone's favourite place, certainly mine, the Halliwell Jones Stadium. It's the clash of the two champions, Warrington, winners of the Challenge Cup, where we actually defeated this week's opponents, who won the grand final. It's going to be a very interesting game, marketed the Battle of the Champions, but really, it's the Battle of the Wolves. The Wolves of Warrington and the Wolf in the Saints pack, new head coach Christian Wolf. I believe it'll be a tough first home outing for us, and I predict a very narrow loss. I should really back us, just like I did last week, but I feel our form at home to Saints is quite poor compared to how good it is away when we go to the Totally Wicked Stadium, just like we saw in the playoffs in 2018. However, we will find out on Thursday night, but I hope all the Warrington fans will get down, get to the HJ, get it rocking, as I'm sure they will, for what's to be a very exciting home opener. The Super League is well underway, and it feels good to be back.
Sam, Callum bringing up a good point there about Saints' new coach, Christian Wolf. What do you make of this guy? Do we know much about him?
Yeah, Saints have won easy tonight, but how much influence Wolf has had over that, or whether they would have won anyway. Wolf, 44 years old. I suppose most people will know him from being in charge of Tonga more recently, but a teacher by profession. He joined North Queensland Cowboys in 2005, in the junior development. He coached their under-20s to a grand final before moving to Brisbane and back to the Cowboys. And then last year, he was at Newcastle in their disastrous season as assistant coach. And then he stepped up for the last two games to be caretaker, winning one, losing one. So it's a 50% success rate.
Being Australian and working as a teacher, was corporal punishment abolished during the 80s, or is that still allowed there? And therefore, with Saints not signing anyone this season, will he be sort of getting a big stick out?
Christian Wolf, the mild-mannered janitor?
Yeah, could be.
Okay, Wire is set to play their first Super League game at home at HJ on Thursday night against Saints. Last time St Helens were beaten was on the 24th of August 2019 in London against Warrington in the Challenge Cup final. The last time Saints suffered a defeat in Super League was bizarrely again in London on the 9th of June when they went down 23-22. But prior to this, they had a loss also on their travels at France to Catalans on the 6th of April. But goodness me, you have to go all the way back to the last time the Red V lost a game in the north of England to the 4th of October 2018. Do you know who that was against, Sam?
Us in the semi-final.
When you saw that stat, could you believe that? I mean, look, I mean, that is an amazing record.
Yes, I was surprised when I saw that, really. I mean, they were clearly the best team last year, but to see so few losses and actually to be losing to Catalan and London, bizarre.
So, I mean, it seems it doesn't matter what side of the Pennines they've driven to, they've gone back that long to the 4th of October 2018 before they've lost. Dennis, I think there's a clear tactical option here of Price of maybe moving the Warrington St Helens game down to your part of the world.
Where's my part of the world?
South.
Well, south. You know, once they get past Birmingham, St Helens get a nosebleed and they just can't win. Mm-hmm. I mean, it probably fits in line with most people from St Helens who don't actually travel outside St Helens in their entire life.
That's just giving me a tackle bag for next week. Thanks for that.
Okay, well, let's move on to the predictions. Daniel has gone. Who do you think Daniel's gone for?
Oh, he's gone for St. Helens every time.
He has gone for St. Helens. Callum has surprisingly gone for Saints too. He's actually turned his allegiance against the Wire. And we'll go the other way around this time. I went last time, and I know this is going to start getting a bit tactical in about week four. I'm going to go for a Warrington win.
Ooh.
Dennis?
Well, I'm going to go for a Saints win, and that wants to be consistent with my strategy this year of us losing a fair proportion of our games in the first half of the season and coming on strong in the second half.
Now, Sam, is a little bit like Cohen Ovett, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, because I've gone Wyatt, so basically I'm Ovett, I've gone out in front. You're worrying now that are you going to catch me if you let me go? Do you sit back a bit, get me on that last bend coming into the straight, or do you sit on my shoulder?
Yes, well, I was a fan of Co, so I'm glad you've gone with Ovett. So, yeah, I thought Warrington played really well last night, better than expected, but I'm still going to go with Saints.
Okay, all right. Well, until next week, you know the score. Write to us at whatbevan@gmail.com, tweet to whatbevan, or find us on Facebook under Brian Bevan. Also, click and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or numerous other podcasting platforms. So we're drawing until we meet again. It's a pod exit from Sam.
All the best.
It's a pod exit from Dennis.
We're seeing you.
And it's an Australian AAA World Bank rating with the highest global average annual GDP growth predicted over the next 5 years from me. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Yeah, but you're completely on fire.
I'm going to go and check on the smash screen. The legend.